Sanna. So, my name is Katori from the University of Tokyo, from Japan. First, I'd like to thank organizers for inviting me to this exciting workshop. I like this atmosphere and weather here very much. Now, Tokyo is the worst season in a year. It's too humid and too hot. So, this weather is very nice. The title here is Optical Lattice Clocks with Bosonic Fermionic Strontium and with the Other Atomic Elements. Unfortunately, in my talk, I couldn't give a serious talk on the variation of alpha. I just want to speak our strategies to achieve 10 to the minus 17th or beyond to discuss such variation seriously. First, I will give an introduction of for the optical lattice clock, and then the main talk here is the design of the optical lattice clock from the viewpoint of quantum mechanics and optical lattice geometry. This is the main topic, and I will give some results for bosonic 3D and fermionic 1D lattice clock experiment. Then I will go to discuss some remaining issues to improve lattice clock's accuracy. One is the collision shift, which was discussed by Jan yesterday. And the other thing is the higher order right shift. And the another one is the black body shift. This is also mentioned yesterday for the strontium lattice clock. And I will give some results for the frequency measurement. And in the last part of the talk, I will mention some new optical lattice clocks with heavier atoms, such as mercury or ethereum. We started our approach for optical lattice clocks almost 7 years ago. The motivation at that point was the ion experiment, which is, for example, given by Dr. Birks, was so great. So I thought that I couldn't compete with these experiments with the same way. So I thought of another way to have a good optical clock. And our approach is to use light shift-free optical lattice that confines millions of atoms in a Ramlick regime, which is some micrometer space. The feature is we have no collision shift, no Doppler shift, long interrogation time, which is very similar to the good feature of ion traps. And the point of our scheme is we can use much more atoms. For example, we can use millions of atoms. Then we could expect the increase of signal-to-noise ratio by a factor of 1,000. That's our prospect when I proposed this scheme. But when I proposed the scheme, the success of this approach was not obvious at all. Nobody used such a perturbation, such a big perturbation for serious atomic clock experiment. So our initial experimental motivation needs to prove such a big artificial perturbation can help precision atomic spectroscopic measurement. This is our main motivation when we started this experiment. To realize optical lattice clock, we put the inhomogeneous right field to trap atoms in the ground state which is the Chitauk shift, which is proportional to the light field squared and dipole polarizability of atoms. Usually, this kind of right shift produces the opposite right shift in the excited state. So, if you measure this frequency, you will measure the differential right shift, which is proportional to the radial intensity. So, this is far from atomic clocks. Then, what we did is to adjust this dipole polarizability for the ground state and excited state. Then we can measure the bare atomic transition frequency. This is the way we realize atomic clocks with light field. This kind of approach was also realized by Kimball Group in 2003. And to use this kind of approach for a clock, important thing is to determine a protocol how to produce this perturbation. So this is too complicated in this situation, so I will summarize it. Then the important thing is how to make a good control over perturbation. And the idea is make more accurate clock, for example, 18-digit clock, with less accurate clock, which is like 10-digit clock, which can be easily supplied by GPS clock. And to do that, what we did is to control perturbation solely by frequency. So we by frequency of the less accurate clock. And this is the idea of magic wavelengths. By only determining the laser wavelength, then we can realize this kind of good clock. But in reality, not necessarily so. For example, we have some angular momentum for atoms and so on. And we will discuss how to compute these obstacles. And this is the plot for the right shift as a function of the radial wavelengths. This is the ground state right shift, and this is the upper state right shift. So by calculation, by tuning the radial wavelengths to around 800 nanometers, we can adjust the right shift for the ground state and excited state. This is the magic wavelengths. And by doing so, by determining the frequency with 6 digits, then we can guarantee 15 digits accuracy for the clock. And we have some other things originating from the finite angular momentum of atoms. This is a vector right shift plot. We have solved this vector right shift problem by an averaging technique a few years ago. So this is not a problem at all present. And there are two more lattice clocks, which is the last talk yesterday, and the another one is the clock in Paris. In 2006, these three groups have measured the absolute frequency of lattice clocks based on strontium, and we have a good agreement, and this value is taken as the secondary representation at a second in 2006. So this is a good starting point for the lattice clock. And I will give the detail in the latter part of the talk. Recently, we have measured more precise frequency of strontium lattice clock. This is our measurement. Still, we have 2.4 hertz uncertainty. But the thing is, the agreement between the three groups, border Paris and Tokyo, are less than 6 times 10 to the minus 60. I think this is a very good situation for
for their agreement. Yeah. So, I will go to the main topic today, which is designing ultimate optical lattice clocks, which minimize atomic interactions and right shift perturbations in view of lattice geometry and quantum statistics. So up to 15 digits accuracy, atomic interaction is not a big problem. But if we push the accuracy further, like 16, 17 digits, these are the big problems. So before go into the detail of the talk, let's remember that fermions have half integer spin. So angular momentum is not equal to zero. So this kind of atom is very sensitive to the right polarization. In this case, the polarization of the optical lattice field. And in the case of bosonic atoms, we can choose to use spin zero bosons. And in that case, the atoms are very insensitive to the polarization of the right field. This is one point, how to design lattice clocks. And the another point is the collisional frequency shift of atomic clocks. Collisional frequency shift is given by, in terms of the differential mean field energy on the clock transition. And mean field energy is given by two particle correlation function at zero distance times some factor and scattering length and atomic density. So the thing is, if you use identical bosons or distinguishable particles, which is, for example, unpolarized fermions, then correlation factor is less larger than one. So there should be collision shifts. But if you use identical fermions, then correlation function is zero. This is the result of the Pauli principle. So the thing is, it's good to use polarized fermions for the lattice clock if you use many atoms at the same time. So we will discuss two lattice geometries. One is 1D pancake potential, and the other one is 3D lattice potential. In this pancake case, we assume we have several atoms in the same pancake potential. And here we assume only a single atom in a single site. Then we can say that in the fermionic case, we can remove atomic collisions by Pauli blocking. But in the case of fermion, we have angular momentum. So we need to be careful about the right polarization. So in that point, in that respect, spatially uniform polarization made by a single right beam is very useful. So this is one of the good configuration for optical lattice clock. The another one is, for example, in the bosonic case. In the case of bosons, there is a collision shift. So we need to use this kind of potential to isolate atoms. So the solution will be 3D optical lattice for bosonic case. So we think these two will be the best configuration to realize lattice clocks. And first one is the lattice clock with spin polarized fermions. This is realized nearly 2-3 years ago. In this case, we have pancake potential like this, and we have several atoms inside a single pancake, and we polarize the atoms, and we activate the power blocking of collisions. This is the idea. As discussed yesterday, the coherent excitation, optical coherent excitation in this kind of single, in this kind of pancake potential is not so easy. Although these power blocking is clearly observed in the microwavelet or optical frequency, radio frequency region. But in optical frequency region, there is some challenge. And this is the experiment. We have diode laser to make a standing wave of lattice. And we trap several tens of atoms in a single pancake potential in the lattice. And we shine a probe laser made by a diode laser locked to a stable cavity. And this is a picture of strontium trapped in the vacuum chamber. And this is the energy level for 88. This is bosonic strontium and fermionic 87 strontium, which have angular momentum and hyperfine structure. In the case of 87 strontium, because of the nuclear spin, we have a hyperfine structure, and there is a Zeeman splitting. So to remove the Zeeman shift as well as the vectorized shift, we excite outer Zeeman shifts and average these frequencies to get the perturbation-free transition frequency. In the case of boson, we don't have a hyperfine structure, so it's simple. And we measure the singlet S0 to P0 transition. And this is the typical spectrum we observed. We have 10 hertz spectrum at 430 terahertz optical frequency. And this is the 87 strontium fermionic data. And first, I will discuss the Rabi oscillation in the excitation. This is the Rabi oscillation of the clock transition. The point is, we can excite nearly 100% of atoms in the initial pipe house. And it means that we can excite fermionic system in phase. So this shows that the fermionic identity can be preserved during optical excitation. So this will guarantee power blocking of collisions. I will go back to this topic in detail later. And this is somewhat detailed, so I will skip it. The next thing is the three-dimensional optical lattice clock using bosons. So in this case, we have collisional shift. So we need to isolate bosonic atoms by a lattice point. This is what we do for bosonic atoms. But the point, and this in the case, the point is to make a three-dimensional optical lattice, we need at least two EFI. This means that if there is a polarization gradient in space, this is the plot of the EFI vector of the optical lattice. So the thing is, because the fermionic isotope has an finite angular momentum, and it can couple to this varying E field. So it's difficult to apply fermionic species to this 3D. But in the case of bosonic atoms, they have J equals zero state, scalar state. So there is no coupling to this varying E field. So it's good to use bosonic strontium for this 3D lattice experiment. This is how we did measurement. We constructed the 3D optical lattice inside the power building cavity, power buildup cavity, and we trapped almost a million of 88 strontium atoms. The point in this experiment is exciting, the clock transition of singlet S0 to triplet T0. This clock transition is completely forbidden. So to get the finite transition moment for the triplet P0 state, we have magnetic mixing with the nearby J equal 1 state, which is triplet T1 state, as proposed by Taishinachev. And this is what we did. So we realized two different configurations of optical lattice clock. One is spin polarized 87 strontium atoms in a pancake potential. And the other one is the 88 bosonic strontium in a three-dimensional optical lattice. This plot is quite similar to what was shown by Eckhard Pike yesterday, the YB clock comparison. But in our case, we have used different isotopes for the comparison. And we shared clock razor and probe razors and measured the stability of these two independent clocks. And also, this measurement gave us information on the isotopes. And this is the result of the two clock comparison, 88 strontium and 87 strontium. And this is the around deviation plot. And for the 88 to 87 comparison, we achieved the around deviation of mid 10 to the minus 16th in 2000 averaging time. And with the, from the measurement, we can deduce the isotope shift of the two atoms, which is measured to be 62 point something hertz with uncertainty of 1 hertz. This is the uncertainty budget for 87 strontium and 88 strontium optical lattice clocks. The main part I will discuss later is the lattice fourth order redshift. Because by the magic wavelength approach, we can eliminate up to second order of the E field. But for the fourth order, we can't control the redshift. So this is a topic in the future. And the another thing is, as mentioned yesterday, we have a huge black body shift, which is 2.4 hertz at 300 Kelvin. This is too big in the future. And another thing is the collision shift. If the optical excitation of fermionic system is not perfect, there should be some collisional shift. But in this case, 3D lattice is perfect because of the isolation of the optical lattice potential. In the case of three-dimensional clock because we introduced a transition moment by a magnetic field perturbation. So we have relatively large systematic corrections in this case. For example, probe light shift uncertainty is 0.3 Hz presently, and second order Zeeman shift is also the same order. And but the point is, so larger corrections for bosonic cases. And I want to establish some connections to variational constants. And this is a transparency I made just yesterday. I thought of the isotope shift. Isotope shift is originally came from mass shift, and also there is some other complicated effects. But simply, we assume this is a mass shift. Then it's related to a reduced shift. So we can connect, we can make a connection to the mass ratio measurement. In the case of 88 to 86 isotope shift, it's on the order of 100 megahertz in our case.
And then you can be able to do this analysis that you're talking about.
Volume shift is also in, so you can measure volume shift.
So I need your solution for this thing, for the video thing. And simply from mass shift, the mass ratio measurement will be done at 10 to the minus 11 level with a present apparatus. But maybe this value is not very attractive for the discussion of the mass ratio measurement. So in the latter part, I will discuss some remaining problems for future investigation of the lattice clock. The first one is the Pauli blocking of collision. So here we investigated the lattice oscillation closely. And the another one is the higher order right shift. So for that purpose, we can think of the blue detuned magic wavelengths where we trap atoms at the node of light shift potential. So in that case, it really simulates pore traps for ions. And another serious one will be blackbody shift. For this purpose, we may construct the cryogenic lattice clock. And this is the frequency measurement we recently done by optical fiber ring. And some prospects for lattice clocks with heavier atoms. First one is the investigation of Rabi oscillations of spin polarized fermions. Usually, we have some decoherence in the dynamic oscillation. But what prevents us from such a coherent excitation? This is our measurement of Rabi oscillation on the clock transition. The interesting thing is, because we have several occupancy in the vibrational ground state of the lattice and first ground state, first excited state of the vibrational sky state and second, and because of that population distribution. And the Rabi oscillation frequency for the zero atom and one atom and two atom is different. So we could measure the beat frequency of that different rhythmic frequency. And we can measure that beat signal as the envelope oscillation of this rhythmic frequency. So this is exactly the same as the collapse and revival experiment in another experiment. So we have the collapse and revival, which is a result of the different rhythmic frequencies. For the power blocking purpose, the most important thing is the excitation probability in the initial rhythmic cycle. In this case, we observed almost 100% excitation in the first rhythmic cycle. So we expect that the power blocking is effective for this one-dimensional lattice case. We can measure such a rhythmic frequency for a much longer period. For example, in this case, by reducing the number of vibrational states by further cooling. Here we have only a vibrational ground state, so we have a single component oscillation. Because our laser jitters at around 100 milliseconds. But regardless of the jitter of the laser, the population oscillation continues up to 1 second. So which is only limited by the background gas collisions and also by lattice photon scattering. Presently, it's around 1 second. So by reducing the background gas collision by using a better vacuum pressure, and also by reducing lattice clock intensity, we can extend the coherence time up to 10 seconds, which is good enough for the power blocking to operate. But this shows a bad case. If you misalign the clock rate intentionally, and by introducing inhomogeneity for the clock excitation, we can quickly reduce the rhythmic oscillation. So this shows that the magic wavelength lattice is really immune to external perturbations. And this is a simulation, so let's skip it. And the another one is the blue detuned optical lattice. So we make a periodic lattice potential. And usually, we trap atoms at the intensity maximum of the lattice potential. But if we can trap atoms at the node of the lattice potential, then atoms see minimum light field during atoms that are trapped in the lattice potential. So this really simulates hole traps, which traps ions in a minimum of E field. And these blue detuned magic wavelengths can be found by several points. And we have experimentally investigated such magic wavelengths. And in this measurement, we measured the drive shift, differential drive shift, as a function of the laser frequency. By this measurement, we determined the magic wavelengths for the dark lattice is at 389 nanometers. This is also a good option for the future optical lattice clock. And another try we are doing is the cryogenic lattice clock. The black body shift rapidly decreases at temperature if it has a T⁴ dependence. So at the room temperature, we have 2.4 Hz back body shift. But once reducing the temperature down to liquid nitrogen temperature, the contribution is only 10 millihertz. It's very good and seems easier. We have demonstrated this kind of atom transportation system for another experiment a few years ago. So this is a real strontium atom transferring up to 1.5 millimeters. So we are constructing this kind of liquid nitrogen tank to cool lattice stock. So the next thing we will do is to install this tank in the vacuum chamber and transferring this strontium atom inside this nozzle. So I hope we could realize this kind of cryogenic clock soon. And we recently measured the lattice clock frequency using atomic fountain operating at NMIJ in Tsukuba, which is around 50 kilometers from Tokyo in a straight line. But to find the dark fiber between Tokyo and Tsukuba, we actually found 120 kilometer dark fiber. And in the spring, we had measured our lattice frequency, our lattice clock frequency using a fountain in Tsukuba. And this is how we did the measurement. In Tsukuba, they have a fountain, which is now in construction, and they refer the TAI for this calibration. So this fountain is operating at 2 or 3 × 10⁻¹⁵ level, I guess. And they convert this fountain clock to an optical frequency, especially the 1.5 micron frequency for the fiber transmission of 120 kilometers to Tokyo. In Tokyo, we convert this frequency to the lattice frequency with a COM setup, and we measured the lattice clock frequency. And I skip it. By doing so, we have better value for the strontium lattice clock frequency in Tokyo, which is a factor 2 improvement from the last measurement. The good thing is, by this measurement, 3 lattice clocks agreement is now 6 × 10⁻¹⁶. So, anyway, TAI is not a good reference, at least in the University of Tokyo. So we need to have another reference for further physics experiments. For example, such as measuring the fine structure constant variation. And the good thing is, to detect this value, it's better to use heavier atoms, because the sensitivity is proportional to d squared. And this is the candidate for optical lattice clocks. We can realize lattice clock using rare gas atoms, but the lifetime is not very long in the presence of lattice rays. So, but polonium is very dangerous, and PV is also interesting, but we need some consideration. So we took mercury because this is the heaviest among the candidates. Actually, we have strontium and mercury and ytterbium in our lab. And they're now under construction. We have three different cavities in the same vacuum chamber, which is to stabilize the lasers. And we have now strontium lattice clock, which is operating almost perfectly. And we are now developing ytterbium and mercury lattice clocks. Using the value that has been presented yesterday by Dr. Berkist, they have measured the 10 to the minus 17th accuracy of changing of alpha. Then to compete with this measurement, we need to measure the frequency change of mercury, for example, at the level of 1 times 10 to the minus 17th level. So the work is getting harder and harder as time goes by. So this is the lattice clock with strontium and ytterbium. The good point of this experiment is that we can operate the strontium lattice clock and ytterbium lattice clock in the same optical chamber, same vacuum chamber. And it means gravitational perturbation or other perturbations can be canceled out as a common mode noise because the atoms are trapped at exactly the same place. So this kind of feature will be very interesting to pursue the accuracy of 10 to the minus 19th or 10 to the minus 20th. And the another one is the mercury clock. So compared to mercury ion clock experiment, because the angular momentum of the clock state is zero, so sensitivity to alpha variation is not very high. So we need more accurate measurement for this case. But from a methodological point of view, mercury lattice clock is very interesting because it has a very small black body sensitivity. It's almost 1/10 of strontium or ytterbium. So this is a very good point from a methodological viewpoint. And as a first step, we have realized the magnetic optical trapping of mercury atoms last year. We have trapped 6 isotopes, and this is the picture. So this is the end of the talk. This is my group. This is Dr. Takamoto, who worked on spin polarized lattice clock. And Akatsuka worked on a three-dimensional lattice clock. And we have cooperation with Silverstone, and our frequency measurement is done with the collaboration with the people in NMIJ, Tsukuba. Thank you very much for your attention.
There's a collisional shift in the 1D lattice with the fermions, and you say it is maybe differences of the Rabi frequency, as I understand. Couldn't it also be that the transverse quantum numbers are not exactly equal, and that simply the atoms are not in the same quantum state, and so they can still collide because of the transverse
ocean? Yeah.
there is a transverse motion. But if you shine a cross laser perpendicular to the transverse motion, then atom, no, laser can't see the atomic motion. So the atoms are excited in phase.
Yeah, not as a Doppler shift, but still if the, say, if the atom is coming, if the second atom is coming from the side, having a different vibrational excitation in the transverse plane.
They are still identical fermions.
Yeah.
There's nothing that distinguishes the two fermions.
Yeah.
That's because they have different vibrational quantum numbers.
From outside, we can see.
Aren't they distinguished? In a different quantum number, you're not measuring this quantum number, but it is there. There is this additional degree of freedom, and they may have different.
But for the
correlation, which makes this effect, they still, even in a different vibrational state, but the same spin state, they still have correlation functions small at small distances. It's when you do not use mean field approximation and do some kind of exact correlation, including. Exact population, putting correlation, even atoms in different different some kind of radial and orbital states, they still in fermions, they still have zero correlation functions, small differences. Mm-hmm. So it's beyond mean field approximation, but it's easier to understand. They still don't like each other. They don't want to be in the same point, even if in different radial states. It's more. Yeah.
So, did I understand it correctly that the systematics of the bosons are pretty high compared to the fermions? Mm-hmm. Is there any chance that you can know that? I mean,
yeah. Well, it depends on the. It depends on the interrogation time. So. Now we use the Penthouse excitation for the cross transition to get a dipole moment for that excitation. We need to apply this magnetic field and also this light field. But if you extend the interrogation time 10 times, then you can reduce 10 times. So, for example, if you operate the lattice clock at 10 to the minus 18, then this correction may be negligible. It's getting smaller and smaller.
Why second order Z amount is so dramatically different?
So,
it's main source for
the point is, for the clock transition, we employ nuclear magnetic field for the weak field. So 0 to 0 transition is strictly forbidden. And in the case of.
Oh, yes, yes, yes. You need to apply magnetic field.
Yeah.
Any other questions? So, please.
So, for the mercury clock, the transitions are in the UV. Mm-hmm. Would you have problems with the photoionization for those transitions?
Not yet. Yeah.
I mean, I guess they would photoionize, right?
Yeah.
So is that a problem for you?
So there is two photon ionization with a lattice clock. But the good thing is there is no single photon ionization. I think we may have it. And theoretically, it was calculated. Two photon ionization rate for the lattice laser was calculated, and I forgot the exact number, but it was negligible now. This is 0.01 or something per second.
Any other questions? If no questions, yeah? So we have a break exactly 2 minutes. If you want to pick up for it.
Can you start the comment?
So, well, computer.